Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On his 60 Minutes appearance last night, President Obama said he didn't lose sleep over taking out Osama bin Laden. And there has been some discussion about what U.S. policy is. Is it justice? Is it vengeance? What's the difference between those? What's the history of targeted assassination in the world? We're going to have a discussion this hour that addresses all of those issues with Professor Jeff McMahon, professor of philosophy at Rutgers University and author of The Ethics of Killing, Problems at the Margins of Life and Killing in War. He is a professor of philosophy and prior to coming to Rutgers was a fellow at St. John's College, Cambridge University. He has taught at the University of Illinois, and his principal interests are in medical ethics and international ethics. He has been doing work that has been supported by the MacArthur Foundation, the National Endowment for the Humanities, the U.S. Institute of Peace, the American Council of Learned Societies, and the Guggenheim Foundation, and has published a number of papers on medical ethics and also the distinction between killing and letting die and brain death. So this is the kind of conversation that is right up your alley, I'm sure, and we'll have some very interesting conversation and phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Professor McMahon was at a conference on targeted assassinations just a few weeks ago at the University of Pennsylvania. Be interesting to have that conference reconvene at this point in time. Professor McMahon, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks a lot for having me.
The president, during his 60 Minutes appearance, said last night that he didn't lose any sleep over taking him out. Did you?
No, I didn't either. Though you raised the question about whether this was justice or vengeance. And my view is that it really shouldn't be regarded primarily as either. It should be regarded primarily as defense. And that's a bit different from the notion of justice that President Obama invokes, which I think is punitive or retributive justice, that is, just punishment. And I don't think that's what this should be about.
Defense. And why do you say it's defense? So that he would not attack again, so that we could keep him from hurting us again?
Yes. I think the reason for trying to subdue Osama bin Laden is primarily that he continued to pose a threat to innocent people.
Is this, we've been hearing this phrase, targeted assassination. Is that how you would describe what we did?
The phrase that's usually used is targeted killing, and yes, it was a clear and paradigm instance of what's called targeted killing. The country that has practiced that policy the most and for the longest is Israel, but the United States has a policy of targeted killing as well, and that policy has escalated under President Obama rather from what it was under President Bush.
And what are the origins of that policy?
Well, as I say, I think the earliest instances are probably Israel's efforts to track down and kill terrorist suspects. There have been instances of political assassination throughout history, but what's called targeted killing is rather different. That term doesn't primarily refer to the assassination of political leaders. It refers to the hunting down and killing of individual operatives who are regarded as a dangerous threat to the security of a particular society.
And when and I don't even know who makes these decisions, so please let me know that, but are those decisions informed by scripture in some way? Are they informed by history?
The decisions to target particular individuals?
Yes.
They are decided by a network of people operating in counterterrorism offices in various countries. decisions are made by a group of people who are relying on intelligence information from a great number of sources.
Mm-hmm. And is there a difference, and explain it to me, the difference between targeted killing of, for defensive reasons, of someone like Osama bin Laden and not having a targeted killing, even though it is your goal to have somebody like Gaddafi out of power? Why wouldn't a targeted killing policy apply there?
Well, it could. If the United States were to seek to kill Gaddafi, that could count as an instance of targeted killing, though it would also be an instance of what we would call political assassination. These are not sharp distinctions by any means.
I'm interested in your response. Right after we heard the news of the killing, there were a few voices, and there continue to be a few voices, who have said, when you look at who we are as America, that we stand for something different, and that the policy probably all along was targeted killing, not capture of this person. And I'm wondering why there was confusion, and if we still know what our policy was in when we got him. What we should have done, just to let the world once again know who we are, is capture the guy and put him on trial so that the whole world could hear about his atrocities, and do this in the United States, because after all, that's the way we do things.
Well, I think that that is the right response, by and large. We have two different sets of norms governing policies involving killing. One is the set of norms governing the conduct of war. The other is a set of norms governing law enforcement or police action. The laws of war govern the treatment of people who are combatants. Now, there's a question, was Osama bin Laden an enemy combatant, or was Osama bin Laden just a criminal? If he was a combatant, our treatment of him should have been governed by the norms that govern the practice of war. If he was a criminal, our treatment of him should have been governed by the norms that govern police action or law enforcement. Now, I don't think myself that bin Laden could be considered a combatant. A combatant is a legal notion. It's a notion defined by the attribution of certain rights, immunities, and liabilities to an individual. And I don't think that we thought that bin Laden had any of the rights that go with combatant status, so I don't think he had any of the liabilities that go with combatant status. And the primary thing about a combatant is that a combatant can be legally killed at any time during a state of war. But I don't think that was the case with bin Laden. I therefore think that we ought to have captured him rather than killed him. And I wonder why that didn't happen, given that we now know that he was actually unarmed and could have been, let's say, shot in the leg just as one of his wives was, and incapacitated and rendered harmless in that way. I have some speculations about why the policy seemed to be to kill him rather than to capture him. One mm-hmm. is perhaps the most plausible one, that if we had captured bin Laden, his followers might have then decided to take Americans hostage in the hope of some kind of exchange, which, of course, we could never have done, and that would have led to a terrible situation and terrible and impossible decisions for the Obama administration. So they may have just decided that best to avoid all of that, best to avoid the risks of arresting him. They may also have thought that it wasn't worth the life of another American to try to spare his life. That is, they may have decided there will be no risks assumed unnecessarily by the Navy SEALs who conducted the operation. That's another possibility. And both of those seem to me to be plausible and possibly defensible explanations for why he was killed rather than captured.
And how do you explain, I don't even know who was giving the news initially or how things got so jumbled, but it seemed as though we had to officially make an announcement that he was armed, you know, that there was this woman who was put in front of him and a human shield was used. It's very interesting that that's how it was described when that indeed was not true. Did it just make us feel better somehow to know that, to think that he was armed?
I have no idea what the source of those reports was. I mean, I know who made them. It was the counterterrorism advisor, Brennan.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is that he would not have said those things had that not been a suggestion that emerged initially in the first garbled transmissions from the SEALs in the immediate wake of the operation. Well, you know, they may have said something about a woman between us and bin Laden. She would, I assume, be the wife who was shot in the leg. And somehow or other that was misinterpreted as bin Laden's holding her as a shield. I mean, the interesting thing was that all of these claims were immediately retracted within
yes.
days. And it was admitted quite openly that he was, in fact, unarmed. I suppose that could have been concealed. It certainly would have been to the Obama administration's advantage in public relations terms to have tried to conceal that. I think, in a way, it's quite admirable that that was not concealed, that it was told straightforwardly. I mean, there weren't other witnesses to what went on there besides the SEALs and any survivors. And the word of the SEALs would have had greater credibility than the word of anybody who was living in the compound. So presumably this is something, the fiction that he was armed could have been maintained.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any doubt? I'm wondering, it was probably the president. Do you have any doubt that the SEALs were told to kill this man, that that was the order, to take him out?
Yeah, I have some doubt about that. I really don't know what to believe about that. Brennan said that there were contingency plans for capturing him. Now, Brennan said that when he said a lot of other things that turned out to be false, but that wouldn't be something that could be a result of, you know, the garbled transmission of information. He would certainly know what the plans for the operation were. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. It certainly looks like the SEALs had the opportunity to capture him at minimal risk rather than kill him. That they killed him but managed to shoot his wife in the leg suggests to me that the aim of the operation was to kill him. And as I say, there are a couple of reasons why they may have decided to go for killing rather than capture. It's just something about which I don't think we can be certain. Somebody knows what the orders were, of course, but I can't claim to know.
Mm-hmm. Once again, the president and others in describing this mission they use the phrase justice, that justice has been served here. This was a just action. We're using it again and again. Very rarely, as a matter of fact, you may be the first person I've heard describe this as a defensive action, that we did this for defense. Why do we use the word justice?
Well, because it sounds good, it contrasts with vengeance, I suppose. It's suggestive of something like due process of law, but of course that's precisely what was absent in this case. Now, I don't think that bin Laden himself was wronged or had his rights violated. It's just because it seems to me perfectly clear in this case that he was guilty of past crimes and that he posed a very great threat and that he was a legitimate target for defensive action, at least in moral terms. But, of course, when he was found in the compound, he was defenseless. It wasn't necessary for defense against him to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
So they may, as I say, have reasoned that the forces that he directed would be better contained by killing him than by capturing him, for the reasons I suggested, maybe, you know, fear of hostage taking or something of that sort. But to call it justice is to suggest that this is somehow analogous to the operation of the criminal justice system, that this was just punishment. But I think in the United States we should think of just punishment as being meted out through judicial institutions and not by military forces.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. What did you make of the crowds? And they were mostly college students or college-age students, young crowds who were probably in middle school when 9/11 happened. In great numbers, cheering, American flags being waved. It was a party kind of atmosphere on a Sunday night, a week and a day ago. Were you offended by that? Did you understand that? There's been a lot written about it.
Whether I was offended is not to the point. I did think it was rather shameful, in fact. And I think it was shameful precisely because it revealed that these people regarded this as vengeance rather than as defense. Mm. I don't think they themselves were feeling a terrific sense of relief that they were no longer threatened by this man. Rather, they were jubilant that this enemy had been killed, that this was vengeance for his crimes. And I just don't think that's the way we should regard it. And no doubt he deserved punishment, and he got something that one might think of as punishment, but the celebratory atmosphere I thought was very unseemly.
And what is it about, is it a peculiarly American thing? Is there something about us that makes us respond that way?
No, I don't think so. As a lot of people who condemned the celebrations pointed out, they were in one way rather similar to the celebrations in various parts of the Arab world that occurred when the planes flew into the Twin Towers on 9/11. People there also thought, well, you know, justice is done.
Yeah.
In a perverse way.
It's so hard to take all of that in still, isn't it? It's still, when you just said that, I just was reminded of what happened and how hard it was to understand the celebrations in parts of the Arab world and how hard it was to understand celebrations here, but much harder to understand the celebrations in the Arab world for such
Well, of course. I mean, there was a huge difference, and that is that the people inside the Twin Towers were not mass murderers. They
right.
were not criminals. They were not wrongdoers.
They were just
and
going to
And Bin Laden was all of the above.
Yeah. All right, let's take phone calls. We have many of them. I'll give you the email address, too, in case you're having a hard time getting through today. That is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Our email address, our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our guest this hour is Professor Jeff McMahon, professor of philosophy at Rutgers University and author of The Ethics of Killing, Problems at the Margins of Life, and Killing in War. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We start our phone calls with Tom in Menominee Falls. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Good morning, Kathleen and Professor McMahon. Thank you for letting me jump in the conversation. I just have a couple quick comments. First of all, Professor McMahon, you said a while back that you felt that this decision to go in and take out Bin Laden was kind of made by, I think you suggested, a network, a broader network, a worldwide network. And I listened to that special last night with President Obama, and he seemed to indicate just the opposite. It was a very tightly secretive mission. He didn't even share the details with Michelle Obama. It was that secret. So I don't think it was really made by a very large group of people.
No, excuse me, I wasn't really referring to the Bin Laden killing when I made that comment. At that point, Kathleen had asked me about targeted killing in general. Who makes
okay.
these decisions?
Okay.
And what I was saying was, in Israel, They rely on an intelligence network to determine who the potential candidates for targeted killing are. Then they go through a lot of screening, and a lot of people look at it. And then before a targeted killing is done, it has to be signed off on by a series of people, including a legal advisor at the end, and so on. So it's a complicated process like that. The bin Laden killing was only one of a very great many targeted killings that have taken place in recent years.
Okay. Well, I on the other hand, I do agree with you on another comment you made very strongly, and that is that we should have at all costs captured bin Laden alive. I don't think there was any reason for killing him, because as you suggested, he was most likely unarmed. And to me, rather than a targeted killing or an assassination, or call it what you want, I think this kind of had the essence of a mob hit is what it was. He to put it in the terms of The Sopranos, he was whacked. And the reason we got rid of, I think, Osama bin Laden is because he had a lot of secrets with him. And who knows what kind of intelligence or secrets he could have revealed. And I think that's why he was taken out, is basically just to keep him quiet.
That's my
take on it.
Don't leave yet, though, Tom. What would you have done with him?
What would I have done with him? Well, certainly, we've got all these detainees right now in Guantanamo who are, far less of a threat. I mean, certainly they're terrorists, some of them. But I really think that as bad of a person as Osama bin Laden was, I mean, nobody's really shedding many tears over him, but he deserved to have his day in court. I mean, we did the same thing with Saddam Hussein. You know, we saw photos and pictures of him crawling out of that hole. There was no doubt that we had the right man, and he was put through the trial, and he was hung. And that was perfect justice. And I think the same thing should have happened with Osama bin Laden.
Okay. Thank you, Tom, for your call. Professor?
Well, I'm not sure what secrets he might have had. If he had had secrets that would have been very embarrassing to the United States, he was free to broadcast them now, as he could have in court. So I'm not quite sure what secrets Tom has in mind that he might have blurted out once arrested. I suspect that the Obama administration simply thought, assuming that he was killed deliberately, that the SEALs were sent to kill him rather than to capture him. I assume that the reason for that is that they figured that he would be more dangerous to the United States alive than he would be if he were dead, because of what his followers would do if he were detained alive. I guess there's something to be said for the claim that he deserved a day in court, though my view is I don't think that's something he himself personally deserved. It's something that our system guarantees to everybody, but it guarantees that to everybody in order primarily to protect innocent people. Real mass murderers, seems to me, don't deserve much of anything. But we have the system that grants them the right to a trial in order to protect from wrongful punishment people who are, in fact, genuinely innocent. We know in this case that Osama bin Laden was not innocent. I mean, we know that as well as we know a guilty verdict has been established by the most rigorous proceedings of a criminal court.
And yet, in the other instance, which was great horror in this world, we did have the Nuremberg trials. Why did we do it that way?
Well, again, I think the primary explanation is to uphold the rule of law in the world. And I do think, I agree with Tom, that's what we should have done in this case. Not because bin Laden himself deserved it or had a right to it, not because any of the defendants at the Nuremberg trials themselves had a right to anything given what they had done, but to establish and solidify the rule of law in the world so that this is something that is guaranteed to everyone.
We go to Dan in Deerfield next. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to comment quick on the, you were speaking about the celebration, you know, the kind of jubilant attitude after the news came out about Osama. And me and my fiance began arguing almost right away when that came on the news because I was watching the people running down towards the White House. And I thought, you know, in a way it was kind of a nice moment, not to sound sick, but I kind of wished I was there. And she immediately stepped up and said, you know, no, I think that's sick. I think it's wrong to celebrate death, no matter who it is, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And we were arguing almost right away about it. And I was saying, you know, look, I don't see this as a celebration of death in any way. You know, this was somebody who thrived on death. And this is somebody who, you know, to me and you and to anybody else who was a kid when this happened, this guy was really just the face of fear and terror and, you know, accomplishing his own warped goals at all costs, you know, women, children, whatever it is. So I don't really think he deserves to be treated as anything other than, you know, that special rank of people like Hitler and like him who are just sick and warped in a way that really doesn't deserve any kind of special treatment in that way, you know, if that makes any sense. I just I didn't see it as a celebration of death. I saw it as a celebration of you know, of life, of, you know, one point for the good guys and, you know, the fact that somebody who's that warped and twisted and who's been that much of a, you know, a false face of Islam, because Islam is not like that. He's been a false face of Islam and for too long has, you know, been what people associate with that religion when he's not. He's just a maniac. And like I said, you know, I feel like it's one point for the good guys, him being gone. And I didn't really see those celebrations as a sick thing or as a celebration of death. I just saw it as, you know, people being happy because this is somebody who should not be walking around this planet.
So have you worked things out with your girlfriend or do you still argue about it?
No, we've come to a bit more of an understanding. You know, she understands that I wasn't, you know, I wouldn't be out there whooping and hollering because, you know, over spilled blood. And, you know, I understand that she was, you know, she just didn't think it was a good idea to throw fuel on the fire to she thought it was bringing down us to the level of people who were out in the streets after 9/11. But I really didn't see it like that because, you know, as your guest said, the people who were in the Trade Towers on 9/11 were innocent people, and Osama bin Laden is anything but.
Yeah, Professor McMahon.
Well, there is something to your mention of Hitler. I do think that if the Jews of Europe had been delivered the news that Hitler had been killed, it would not have been unseemly for them to celebrate. And that suggests that what the crowds around the White House did and elsewhere in the country was certainly understandable. But in a way, I agree with your girlfriend that it sends the wrong message to the rest of the world, this kind of macho gloating about, you know, you don't mess with the U.S., this is what happens to you, and so on. I think makes us look undignified. And I didn't watch Obama on television. I don't watch television, but I did read about the speech the next day. And I think that he managed to preserve a sufficiently somber demeanor and to maintain his dignity in making the announcement. And I think that's the way the rest of us ought to have reacted as well.
Why don't you watch television?
I work too much and I have too many books I want to read.
Okay. Let's talk for a moment, because this has also been kind of a murky strategy in my mind. The president had a lot of different ways he could have gone with this. It sounds like there was disagreement about, you know, are we going to do this targeted killing or are we going to do a drone strike and take out the whole compound. Another one of our policies has been to use these drones that are somewhat targeted killings, but they also, we get various accounts about the number of civilians who may be killed as a result of more targeted killing. What do you think about these drones, the uses of drones?
Well, it's a complicated subject. I mean, the advantage of the drone strike is that you don't have to risk your own soldiers or police forces in trying to eliminate the threat from certain people. That's, of course, the attraction of the drone strike. Insofar as drone strikes are more dangerous to innocent bystanders, there's something to be said against them. I do think that it's something to be said in praise of President Obama that he decided to conduct the mission against Osama bin Laden using SEALs rather than unmanned weapons like a Predator drone. He could have done it that way, but then it would have been uncertain how many bystanders, children, and so on might have been killed. So I think it was admirable that he did it the way he did.
Let's go to an email here, this one from Betty. It's very long. Let me just read part of it. In my view, it is never possible, especially in our global society, to kill all one's enemies. The only hope is to try to make new friends. Gifts of money, aid, food will not do it. Somehow we must convince folks that we are the good guys, that our values are the true values. I don't think you can do that with death in the night, no matter who the target.
Well, that may sound naive to many listeners, but I have tremendous sympathy with the fundamental idea there, which is we would be doing better in places like Afghanistan and elsewhere to devote our tremendous resources to helping ordinary people with economic problems, health problems, and so on, than we are when we go to war in their country. Policies of generosity and kindness towards other people, I think, are far more productive than war in most instances. Now, I wouldn't advocate being nice to Osama bin Laden or Al-Qaeda. Sometimes when people are, when people pose a threat of wrongful harm, very often the only way to eliminate that threat is through the use of violence and through killing. But as a matter of larger foreign policy, I agree entirely with this correspondent, this email writer. I think that we should, for example, be being as generous as possible to the Palestinians, help them with education, help them with medicine, help them with commerce, and the same for other groups, same for Afghans and so on. And if they just see us as a military power, that's to our disadvantage.
Andy in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right, Andy, how are you?
Good. You know, I have to say, I'm a little, irked or rubbed the wrong way when, and I consider myself a pretty proud progressive, and this is a military action that we went through. I find it very frustrating that when, we've endured 9/11, when really the whole scope of our daily lives has changed over 10 years because of Al-Qaeda and because of, what happened and because of Osama bin Laden, because we are fighting a war, that when we go in and when we fight this war and we actually, achieve a target, we go into this compound, it's been monitored for a year, it's a treasure trove of information, it's a military incursion. You know, we're evaluating this as to whether or not in the instant and in the scheme of things, what was happening at the time, that this should have been some kind of a police investigation. This was a military action. And I think that it's wrong to criticize the government for, taking Osama bin Laden out, or however it's being phrased, or saying that's an execution, because this is a military action. And, Osama bin Laden was a part of that military action. He was part of the resistance when the Navy SEALs came in. I think it would have been better if there had been ultimately some kind of a trial, sure. But the reality of it is that this is what we were dealing with, and this is what we were fighting. You can't always have those things. And I find it disturbing to some extent that when he gets killed, so many people come out and blame the government and criticize the government for, you know, how it's been handled. I have trouble with that, and it's not very well with me because
I don't think that many people are troubled by it. Do you think, Andy? I don't think, and maybe I think there's just a slight minority of people who are troubled by it. And even
I know I'm sorry to cut you off. I think that they're troubled by how it happened, and the message is let's blame the government for how it happened.
Right.
You know, and I think it's a little two-faced to say we're happy that he's gone, but on the other hand, we're not happy with how it was accomplished.
Yeah.
And I just I don't want to call everyone out for, you know, being upset that someone gets killed. I'm against the death penalty. So if it sounds like I'm talking at two, you know, ends, I apologize. But I just think that we have to recognize this for what this was, which was a military action, something that Osama was a willing combatant in.
Professor McMahon.
Well, I think it's problematic to describe it as a military action. I mean, I do think that that's problematic in legal terms. If this was genuinely a war and Osama bin Laden was a combatant in a war, one thing you would have to accept on that basis is that the plane that flew into the Pentagon was that the flying of a plane into the Pentagon was a legitimate act of war. It was wrong. It would have violated the laws of war because it had civilians aboard. That would have made it wrong. But if this is a war and Al-Qaeda operatives are enemy combatants, then if they had had their own plane with no civilians aboard and had flown that into the Pentagon, we would have to consider that a legitimate act of war because the Pentagon would be a legitimate military target. And I don't think that Andy would accept that. I don't think that he would accept that that's legitimate. You have to remember that war is governed by one set of norms and conventions and principles, and police action is governed by another set of norms and conventions and principles. And we have to decide under which set of norms this kind of action falls. And I think that it's more coherent to think of anti-terrorist action primarily as law enforcement rather than as war. So that's what I would say about that.
Okay.
Can I say one other thing?
Well, too? Of course, you're the guest.
And that is that one of the worries about the practice of targeted killing that I think we have to bear in mind when we're thinking about this is that this is not a kind of policy that only we will follow if we claim that it's acceptable. It's a policy that our adversaries may be tempted to follow as well. Do we want other states, do we want Libya and Syria and other states to follow a policy of targeted killing, that is sending out assassins and killing the people that they regard as their political enemies? We can't contain this. We can't say, well, this is a form of American exceptionalism. We and the Israelis are the only ones who are entitled to do this. If other countries had predator drones, how would we feel if they were sending them and, you know, striking our military bases and people as well? We have to think about the broader implications of the endorsement of this kind of policy and where it fits within the norms governing war or the norms governing police action.
Hmm. Thank you, Andy, very much for your call. We go next to Lynn in it's Arthur in Viroqua. Hi, Arthur.
Yes, thank you so much. Now, we're assuming that Mr. bin Laden was involved in 9/11, and if you really study the evidence that's been gathered over the last 9.5 years, there are extreme doubts about.
Yeah, I'm not going there. That's the, you know, it's just not proven. I don't want to waste time with that. Let's go to Lynn in Milwaukee. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Fine. How are you, Lynn?
just fine. First, I just want to comment. I like Betty's comments and the professor's response to her comments. I'm in total agreement with all of that. But my first response when I saw the celebration at the White House after the death of Osama bin Laden, my first response was that it was really disappointing and in poor taste and a sense of vengeance and all that kind of stuff. But as I think about it more, I think it has as much to do with celebrating the fact that we finally had some success. We've had,
yes,
as a country, I mean, the whole world's in a lot of changes right now, but as a country, we've really been troubled, whether it's weather issues or economic issues or these wars that go on and on and on and on and on without end. And it's like, finally, there was something that we could look at and say, aha, we succeeded. And then the other thing about that is I don't think I had any idea about how strongly I was impacted by watching the planes hit the towers, you know, so far removed in Wisconsin, and I didn't personally know anyone that was affected by it. But psychically,
yes,
I think I've been holding this grief in my heart for the loss and the the violation against everything we believe in. And it was, in sense, people talk about closure. I don't know if I'd use the word closure, but it was like, okay, that's the other side of that horrible event. And so I don't think of it as celebrating. I think of it as, okay, we can still do things here.
Hmm. Professor McMahon.
I understand the sense that we've avenged this great wrong. I have some intuitive sympathy with that idea, but I just don't know how much sense that really makes. Have we given someone what he deserved? Maybe so. Was this a major success of American policy? Maybe so. We'll have to wait to find out what the consequences of this action will be. It may turn out in one way to have been counterproductive. This happened in, I believe it was 1996, when Israel conducted a targeted killing against a Hamas operative who was one of the weapons makers for Hamas, and he'd been responsible for the killing of a very large number of Israelis, and he was killed in 1996 in a very sophisticated operation involving the use of his cell phone. But that was when it was discovered by other Palestinians. It was followed by a wave of suicide bombings all over the place, and far more Israelis were killed than might have been killed had he not been killed in this way. So, again, I don't know whether, in terms of its consequences, this has been a success or not. We'll have to wait and find out.
Thank you, Lynn, very much for your call. This hour of the program, we're taking on this issue. Should a reportedly unarmed Osama bin Laden have been captured alive rather than killed, shot dead? Our guest is Professor Jeff McMahon, professor of philosophy at Rutgers University, author of The Ethics of Killing, Problems at the Margins of Life, and Killing in War. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's an interesting email, Professor McMahon, from what this listener thought the scenario ought to be. He says, perhaps he is alive and has been captured by the U.S. That would be the best foreign policy. Have the public and his supporters think he's dead and have him captured and detained. Claim to have a treasure trove of computer information to explain the steady leak of information from this unnamed source. He would be more liable to talk as well because he knows the world thinks he's dead. We're starting to think in terms of intricate movie plots, aren't we?
I guess so. Yes, somehow I doubt that one could make Osama bin Laden deliver a lot of valuable information. We'd have to go back to the practice of torture to do that. Again, I think the benefit of capturing him would not be sparing his life. I think if it had been necessary to kill him, that is, if he had posed a threat at all to the SEALs who had entered the compound, it would have been perfectly legitimate for them to kill him. That is, I don't think he had a right not to be killed that was somehow violated. I want to make sure that, that is clear. I don't think that he was in any way wronged. The advantage of capturing him alive would have been precisely to broadcast that we had captured him rather than killed him, and that we were going to treat him as a criminal suspect in the way that we do with other people and put him on trial. And that would have shown our commitment to the rule of law rather than to kind of vigilante justice that I think is what was precisely what was being celebrated.
Let's go next to Diane in Milwaukee. Hi, Diane.
Good morning. We're so worried about, did we kill him wrongly? Did we use drones and kill some civilians? But we don't seem to worry about Osama bin Laden recruiting suicide bombers that have killed innocent people in all kinds of countries, including Muslim countries, including Iraq, Afghanistan, Spain, all kinds of places where they put bombs on trains. Why aren't we condemning that more?
Well, I think that that has been broadly condemned by almost everybody. I don't know anybody in the United States who approves of it. And the question is, would we have done less to prevent him from recruiting suicide bombers to do more of these things if we had captured him rather than killed him? I do think that if killing him would be far more effective in preventing his followers from carrying out further suicide bombings and other kinds of acts of terrorism, then we would have had a good justification for killing him. But I just am not sure that that's been demonstrated. As I've said many times over the past hour, the primary reason for having tried to capture him rather than kill him was to uphold the rule of law. This, I don't think that our earlier caller was right to say that it's obvious that this was just a military action. It's not at all obvious legally that this is something that was justifiable within the laws of war. It's not clear that the laws of war apply to this kind of operation. If this was an instance of dealing with a terrible criminal, then we should have been operating under the norms of law enforcement, which would require us to try to arrest the man if possible rather than kill him.
Thanks, Diane. Doug is next in Milwaukee. Hi, Doug.
Hi. I just wanted to call. It's not directly related to the topic, but I just think the conversation about condemning the celebration of his death is somewhat irrelevant for the lowest common denominator who doesn't see it as a broad game of chess and isn't privy to all the information. All they can have is a visceral catharsis, and that psychological and rationalizations and that sort of catharsis is definitely something that comes afterward, and condemning either party for either action is sort of irrelevant and kind of beside the point.
All right. Thank you, Doug, very much for the call. We have about a minute left. Art in Milwaukee. Hi, Art.
Hi. I just want to let people know that there are some of us in Wisconsin and Milwaukee raising and discussing this issue. I don't know if you're familiar with the Center for Constitutional Rights, if the guest is, but the president of CCR is going to be speaking at UWM Wednesday night at 7 in the Union. And it's been one of the major groups that's been challenging these targeted assassinations, including this one U.S. citizen who's supposed to be living in the Yemen who's targeted to be killed without any trial or charges.
All right. Thank you, Art, very much. It's 7 o'clock Wednesday?
Yeah, in the Fireside Lounge at the UWM Union.
Okay. Thank you. Professor McMahon, thank you very much for deliberating with us.
Well, thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity to talk with you and with your guest. I appreciate it.
Our guest is our Professor Jeff McMahon, professor of philosophy at Rutgers University. He's author of Killing in War and the Ethics of Killing, Problems at the Margins of Life. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing this hour, and thanks to Chrissy as well for her on-air production here in downtown Milwaukee. Tomorrow during this hour, I'm looking forward to this interview because I think he's quite an actor and has been at the craft for a long time. Alan Arkin will be joining us tomorrow. He is author of An Improvised Life, a memoir. He really got rolling at Second City when it started in Chicago some years ago, and you'll enjoy the path of his life. He's talking about it tomorrow during this hour. Thanks for listening. This is the Ideas Network.